Hello, this is Brian Tracy, and welcome to the Superstar Selling Seminar, which is just about to begin. The very fact that you are listening today means that you are already or on your way to being one of the top salespeople in your field. We know that to earn more, you must learn more. The best salespeople are those who are continually reading, learning, listening, attending sales seminars, and getting better every day. In my many years of selling, starting off knocking on doors and moving up to multi-million dollar sales over the course of my career, I've discovered some key ideas that have really helped me to be more successful. In the coming hour, I will give you some of the best strategies and techniques ever discovered by myself and top sales professionals everywhere. So, if you're ready, let's start the seminar.
Let us begin this seminar with what I call the new realities of selling in the 21st century. First of all, as you're finding, there are more sellers than buyers today. For the first time in our history, there are more people selling products and services than there are people to buy them. There are more people trying to make a living than there are people in the marketplace. In fact, 70% of people selling today have never sold in a downturn. 70% of people managing businesses today or even owning businesses today have never sold in a soft market. And this requires us approaching the market completely differently. Selling today is more complex than it has ever been because customers are more complex. Selling today requires greater focus than ever before. It used to be that you could go out at the market with a machine gun and shoot and bring home the game. Today, you have to be very, very precise and focused, which we'll talk about in the course of this seminar. Selling today requires greater preparation than ever before, and this is really important, is we need to give a lot of thought to what we do before we throw ourselves at the marketplace like a dog chasing after a car. I say many salespeople today are like a dog chasing a rabbit in a summer field. They go after the rabbit, and as they run after the rabbit, suddenly another rabbit pops up, and the dog takes off after the other rabbit, and then another rabbit pops up, and the dog takes off after the other rabbit, and by the end of the day, the dog has been chasing rabbits all day and hasn't caught any. So today what we have to do is get really, really focused. What we're also finding is that customers today are more demanding. They are surrounded by more opportunities and possibilities and more people trying to get their business by cutting prices and increasing services than ever before. And this is only going to increase as markets get tighter and the number of people selling increase themselves. And you have to learn how to deal with that. Sales today require multiple calls. You have to call on the same customer, a qualified customer, several times. So you have to start your sales process realizing that the first call is merely opening the door to find out if this person is actually a prospect or just a suspect. The second call is to advance the call. The third call is to advance it further. The average sale of a complex product today is usually made after the fourth or fifth call. This is just the nature of the beast. People are delaying longer before they make decisions, and so it just requires longer. And 95% of the sale today takes place when you're not there. In other words, it used to be that you could go in and make the sale and get the check and leave. Today, what you can do is you can only go in and talk to the prospect, and they say, well, leave me some information. Let me talk it over with other people. Let's get back again a bit later. And the sale goes on after you've left. 95% of the sale is taking place behind the scenes, and you can't control it, and you can't affect it, and you can't do anything about it. And this is not a problem. This is just a fact of life. And finally, the last thing that we know about selling in the 21st century is that selling today and closing is harder than it's ever been. It used to be that we could get the person to make a decision far faster, but today it's harder. And so I'm going to give you some of the very best closing techniques ever discovered, probably in human history, that you can use and add to your repertoire like arrows to your quiver so you can draw them out and fire them when you get the appropriate opportunity in a selling conversation. Now, we start off with getting more and better prospects. How do you get more and better prospects? We say that the key to success in selling is to spend more time with better prospects. So how do you spend more time with better prospects? The first thing you do is you apply the 80-20 rule to everything you do. You always think in terms of the fact that 20% of your prospects are going to turn into 80% of your customers. 20% of your activities will account for 80% of your results. One of the most important things you do is keep thinking, what are the top 20% of things I do, the top 20% of people I speak to, the top 20% of people I call back on that can represent 80% of the business? So your job in prospecting is to remember, you spend 80% of your time creating customers. Spend 80% of your time in what is called new business development activities. If somebody asks you what you do, you say, I am a new business development specialist for my company. The natural tendency of salespeople is to spend more and more time calling back on old customers. Your job is to spend 80% of your time prospecting and presenting. Spend only 20% of your time following up. Spend 80% of your time looking for new business, thinking about new business, planning new business, preparing new business. And let me give you a definition of a good prospect. A good prospect is someone who can and will buy and pay within a reasonable period of time. That's someone who can and will, that means they have the money and they're willing to part with it, buy and pay within a reasonable period of time. One of my students wrote to me after he attended this seminar. He said he went back to his office and he sat down and he realized he was wasting an enormous amount of time on people who were not willing to buy and pay within a reasonable period of time. He also checked his records and he found that if he met a good prospect, they bought within 30 to 90 days. So he added one question into his qualifying conversation, which tripled his income. When he met a prospect, he would say, if I can show you exactly what you're looking for, within what sort of time period would you be thinking about making a decision? And he would just wait. If the person said, well, you know, in the next month or two or the next few weeks, or we're pretty much ready to make a decision now, then he would spend all of his time with that person. If the person said, well, we're just gathering information, maybe next year, we don't have any cash right now, we're just trying to find out what's in the market, then he realized that this was not a good prospect, so he'd encourage one of the junior salespeople in his office who was going nowhere with his career to spend time with a prospect who was just kicking tires. One of the things you can do from now on is just say, you know, by the way, if I show you something that you really like, what sort of time frame are you thinking about for making a decision? That will tell you if this is someone who can and will buy and pay within a reasonable period of time. Now, here are the qualities of a good prospect. We call this high probability selling. Everybody you speak to has a probability of buying. Some have a medium probability, some have a low probability, some have a very high probability. Your job is to ask questions to find out if this is the kind of person who is a high probability prospect, an extremely good use of your time. So here's some of the qualities or characteristics of a high quality prospect. Number one, the prospect has a genuine need that your product or service can fill. And you can ask them, and you can interview them, probe, ask qualifying questions, but you have to find out if they really need it. For example, if you sell tourniquets and a person has got blood pumping out of their arm, this is a highly qualified prospect. If you sell food and the person is really hungry, this is a highly qualified prospect. If you sell a product or service that offers a specific value that is really important to the customer, this customer is highly qualified. Now, the second quality of a good prospect is the prospect knows you and likes you and respects your business and industry. In other words, the prospect is open and positive towards you. The prospect has had good experience with either you or with other companies in your industry. And I'll come to the qualities of a poor prospect in just a second. Number three, the prospect values the results and benefits of what you sell more than the amount you charge. Now, here's an interesting way of finding out if you're speaking to the right person. They ask you more questions about your product or service and what it does and how they can benefit from it than they ask you about the price. If a prospect is just continually asking you about the price, how much is it? Is that the best you can do? Can you get it cheaper somewhere else? I can get it cheaper somewhere else. If they're not focusing on the right results or benefits of what you sell, this is usually not a good prospect. The prospect is willing and able to make a buying decision in the near future. In other words, if they tell you, we have no money, we're broke, we're out of money, business is down, we're out of cash, and so on, even if they love your product or service, they can't buy it. So a good prospect is a prospect that has money. Now, here's something I used to teach professional salespeople like yourself. When you speak to a person in business especially, or in any part of life, the first question you ask is, how's it going? How's business? If they say business is good. That's a good sign. It means that they have revenue, and they have cash, and they're a good prospect. If they say business is terrible, it's not a good prospect. So you can always open your conversation by just saying, how's business? And if they say, it's great, then you say, ha, I'm in the right place. And finally, the last quality of a good prospect, number five, is the prospect is a good potential source of further sales and referrals. In other words, if you make the sale to this person, it can lead to lots of other sales. This person may be a key person within a company or an organization. This person may be highly respected in the community. This person may know a lot of friends. In other words, this is a good person to get as a customer. Now, quickly, what are the qualities of a poor prospect, what we call a low probability prospect? Well, first of all, he or she is critical of you, your product, and service. In other words, they've got a kind of a negative attitude. They find fault with what you're selling. They criticize your offering. Either it doesn't work that well, doesn't look that good, probably costs too much, and so on. Second, he haggles and complains about your price. It's almost like they breathe in and breathe out and haggle about the price rather than talking about what you need. A third quality of a poor prospect is he compares you unfavorably to your competitors. He keeps telling you that your other competitors offer better products or cheaper products or a better deal than you do. A fourth quality of a poor prospect is he or she is indecisive about purchasing. Well, I'm not sure. Maybe let me think it over. I haven't decided yet. I have to talk it over with someone else. An indecisive prospect can be indecisive for years. And finally, a poor prospect is not a particularly good source of referrals or resales. By the way, what we have found is that prospects who haggle continually over price are usually the kind of customers you don't want anyway, because they're always beating you up. They're very disloyal. They badmouth you to other people. They complain more than other people do, and you know exactly what I'm talking about. Let me give you a rule for success. From now on, when you sell, only sell to people that you like and who like you. If you find that the chemistry isn't there with you and another prospect, just smile, be very friendly, say thank you very much for your time, and leave. Don't spend any more time trying to sell to people that you don't like or who don't like you for any reason. Remember, you are a good person, and there's lots of good prospects out there if you follow some of the other things that we do and talk about in this course. Now, when you prospect, here are the stages of good prospecting. It's really the key to greater sales. First of all, you can phone directly. Introduce yourself. Always be perfectly direct. Describe the result or benefit of what you're selling and tell them that you need a few minutes of their time. When I used to prospect, I would call up and introduce myself and ask them if they would like to see a way to increase their sales by 20 or 30% over the next 6 months. The more precise you can be about some kind of benefit, the more quickly a person responds to you. And they would say, well, yes, I'd be interested. What is it? And I'd say, well, I'd like to take a couple of minutes of your time and show it to you, and you can decide for yourself. You be the judge. Now, here's another thing you could say when you call up. You could say, you know, I have an idea that can save or make you a lot of time or money, and I'd like to take a couple of minutes of your time to show it to you. Well, if a person says to you, well, can you send me something in the mail? Say, well, I'd love to, but I have something I have to show you. Whenever you say the words, I have to show you this, they know that they have to see it personally. Remember, when you phone to get an appointment, or when you fax, or when you quote, use voicemail, you're not trying to sell your product. You're only trying to sell 10 minutes. The most important thing that you can do in your sales life is to get face-to-face with a prospect. You're 10 times more likely to make a sale if you can find a way to get face-to-face with a prospect, even for a few minutes, than if you try to talk about your product or service over the phone. If you try to talk about over the phone, you know what they'll do? They say, can't afford it, not interested, not in the market. So therefore, when a person says, could you tell me a little bit about it over the phone, you say, you know, I'd like to, but I have something that I have to show you. I've got something that you have to see personally in order to evaluate it properly, and I just need a couple of minutes of your time. Another example of how to prospect is call up and say, you know, I have an idea that can cut your costs of document processing by 30%. I have an idea that can reduce your fleet maintenance costs by 25%. I've got an idea that can increase your productivity by 28%. In other words, you always have an idea that can help them save or gain time or money. If you have to leave a voicemail, and at least 50% of times you'll get voicemail, if not more, then what you do is you leave a little message that describes the benefit or result of what you can do. Remember this. There's a big difference in selling between what your product is and what your product does. What your product is what you care about. What your product does is what the customer cares about. So, for example, I sell training services. If I call up and say, I'd like to talk to you about some sales or management training programs, They're not interested. If I call up and I say, I'd like to talk to you about a way to increase your sales and cut your costs within the next 90 days by 15 to 20%, then they're interested because that's the benefit. That's what the product does. So define your product and service in terms of what it does, completely separate from what it is. That's the message that you leave on a voicemail. That's the message that you put in a letter. That's the message that you leave with a gatekeeper if you want to get through. Finally, the last point about prospecting is you need to be polite, persistent, and determined to get the first meeting. Remember this, if people put you off, it's not because they're not interested, it's because they're busy. Everybody today who is a good prospect is busier. And the better the prospect they are, probably the busier they are. So the most powerful word in professional selling is the word ask. Ask politely, ask persistently, ask confidently, ask in a friendly way, smile into the phone when you ask, but don't be afraid to ask for appointments and to continue to ask. Remember, there's a big difference between being persistent, which is good, and being insistent, which is bad. Persistence is admired and respected. Insistence is obnoxious and overbearing. So when the prospect says, I'm not interested, here are the wonderful words you can use. I call this the sweep-aside way of answering any objection you ever hear when you contact a prospect the first time. When they say, I'm not interested, I don't want it, I can't afford it, I can't use it, we're not in the market right now, business is bad, and so on, you've heard all of these. You just simply say these words. That's all right. Most people in your situation were not interested when I first called them, but now they've become our best customers and they recommend us to their friends. These are the critical words. No matter what they say, you say, that's all right, which calms them down. Most people in your situation weren't interested at all when I first called them, but now they've become our best customers and they recommend us to their friends. This will almost invariably trigger the response, what is it? Well, what is it then? And you say, that's exactly what I'd like to talk to you about, and I just need a couple of minutes of your time. Okay, let's go on now and talk about the second part of our seminar, which is getting more and better appointments, and that has to do with dealing with the real needs of customers. What is it that customers really want more than anything else? Well, we know that customers take action on an offering because of two reasons, desire for gain or fear of loss. Every single customer you talk to wants more, better, cheaper, and faster. Your job is to identify what it is your product or service offers them that appeals to this desire to improve their condition. Every single buying decision is aimed at an improvement of some kind. You have to define your product or service in terms of how it improves the customer's life or work or business or family or financial situation or health or relationship. Now, the second major reason or buying need is the fear of loss. An enormous number of things are purchased because people are afraid of loss. They don't want to lose time. They especially don't want to lose money. They're afraid of loss of health. They're afraid of loss of security, which is what drives the entire insurance industry and much of the financial services industry. What is the very best sales presentation? It's when you can combine the two. When you can say, my product or service will give you this, the gain, what they want and what they will buy. However, if you don't take it, this is the potential loss that you can suffer. The very best sales presentations present both the carrot and the stick, the benefit and the potential loss of every product or service. And this is something for you to think through before you go out. Now, in successful prospecting, focus is the key, and it brings us to the four critical questions in marketing. The four critical parts of successful sales and marketing are, number one, specialization. Now, specialization means that you specialize either in a particular product or in a particular service, or with a particular market, or with a particular method of sale, or with a particular type of customer. But you always specialize. I'll give you an example. One of my clients is a company called Allstate Legal Supply. Allstate Legal Supply started off as a small stationer in New Jersey 30 years ago, and they called on different businesses, including law firms. They found that law firms had needs that made them a little bit different from many other businesses, so they decided to specialize in providing law firms with what law firms needed to operate. Today, It's almost a $1 billion company. They're the foremost provider of every single thing that a lawyer could ever dream of needing, no matter how big the law firm, right down to the smallest paperclip, right up to the most sophisticated computer system, and everything in between. They specialize in legal services. By the way, one of the smartest things you can do is if you are having success with a particular type of customer or in a particular type of industry, then specialize in that industry. Focus on finding more customers who are similar to the customers that you are the most successful with. Give you another example of specialization. A friend of mine, Larry, decided to specialize in a particular neighborhood. He picked a neighborhood, upper middle class, good neighborhood, good homes in a growing city, and he identified basically 300 homes within a particular area. He started off with his license, never having made a sale, working out of a used car, living at home. He called on every single home in that neighborhood. That became his farm. And he called on every home in that neighborhood and told them he was in real estate, asked them if they were interested in buying or selling their house, asked them if they knew anyone who was, and left a business card. When he called on all 300 homes, he called on them again. And this is what he did. Every month he walked that neighborhood until he got to know almost everybody in that neighborhood. Within 1 year, when you drove up and down the streets of that neighborhood, Larry's for sale signs were here and there and everywhere else. His first year, he made $84,000. In his fifth year, he made more than $500,000 farming his neighborhood. No one ever bought or sold a house in that neighborhood that they didn't do through Larry. So he specialized in a particular geographic area. Now, another key to market is what is called differentiation. And this, by the way, is the key to success in selling. It is the way you differentiate yourself from your competitors. You have to ask yourself, with regard to your product or service, what is your unique selling proposition? What is it that your product or service offers that no other product or service has? What is it that you do that makes you better than any other person or company offering your product or service? As Jack Welch said at General Electric, he said, if you don't have competitive advantage, don't compete. Now, every company starts off with a product or service that is somehow better in some way. It is impossible for a company to survive unless there is something about its product or service that makes it superior to every other product or service that competes with it. Let me give you an example. A 7-Eleven store. What is the competitive advantage of a 7-Eleven store? The answer is its location. It has a superior location in that it is closer to as many customers as possible so that people go there for the sake of convenience. It does not have a better selection or better prices or better decor or anything else, but its USP is location. McDonald's has built its 30,000 franchise network worldwide on location. They just simply find a location. Now, in many cases, you're selling a product or service that other people carry or offer. How do you differentiate yourself? What is your unique selling proposition? And the answer is this. It's you. It's your unique personality. As Eisenhower once said, it's not the size of the dog in the fight, it's the size of the fight in the dog. If you are a good person, if you are well-prepared and thoughtful, if you are busy and industrious, if you are pleasant and positive and easy to get along with, if you're a helpful and professional salesperson, you become the reason why the customer wants to buy from you rather than anybody else. This is one unique selling proposition that you can develop that nobody else can have. And virtually all of the highest paid salespeople stand out and are distinct because of the quality of themselves as individuals. This is one area that you can develop and work on throughout your entire career, and it pays off over and over again. Now, the third part of strategic marketing and selling is segmentation. In segmentation, you take the first two, your area of specialization and your area of differentiation, and you segment your market and you say, what customers in my market most appreciate my area of specialization and what it is that I do or my product or service does better than anybody else? What and where are the customers that most appreciate what I do? And you segment your market and you go after these people. These are your highest probability customers. Here's a great question for you. If you were to place an ad in the newspaper for ideal customers for you, how would you describe the perfect customer? This is really important. How would you describe your perfect customer? Instead of advertising your product or service and getting people, qualified people to call, what if you could run an ad, say, seeking perfect customers? I, give your name, am seeking customers who fit the following description. And describe your customer. Is knowledgeable in this field, appreciative of what I offer, has a distinct need for it right now, is willing and able to pay for it, is within reasonable driving distance of my office. In other words, play, create a fantasy customer. Say, boy, oh boy, if someone were to ask you at dinner time, describe to me your perfect customer, what words would you use? Then you ask yourself, where and how could I find or create more customers like my perfect customer? That is the process of market segmentation. That will make you rich. Many people have found that there's a particular type of person of a particular age, a particular income, a particular type of job, a particular background, a particular industry, a particular geography. Somehow, there's a particular type of person that they sell to the most easily and readily. And what they do is they only look for that particular type of prospect because they can sell 10 times as many of those prospects than they can spending their time speaking to people who are not interested or can't afford it or don't want it or who are satisfied with their existing suppliers. So the last part of strategic selling is concentration. Concentration means that you concentrate single-mindedly on those customers who can most readily appreciate what you offer and can most rapidly buy and pay for what it is that you're offering to them. So you concentrate single-mindedly on your top 20%, your highest probability, your most valuable, your most important customers. That is the key to the success of all the highest paid salespeople, is they think through in advance and then they aim very carefully and then they concentrate single-mindedly on the very, very best customers that they can possibly speak to. Now, this brings us onward to what we call the golden triangle of selling. Now, the golden triangle of selling is something that I've developed over 30 years, 40 years in the field, I hate to say. I began selling when I was 10 years old, and I've been selling ever since. The golden triangle of selling is based on three parts, and I'm going to explain them in order. The first part, if you can imagine a triangle, the top of the triangle, the peak, is relationship selling. This is establishing a high-quality relationship with your potential customer, with your prospect. The second part of the triangle, the left-hand side of the triangle, is called consultative selling. And this is where you position yourself as a problem solver in the sales conversation. You focus in like a laser beam on the problem or need that the customer has and continually ask him or her about this need and how it affects them and what this they can do to solve the need and how expensive it is for them. Remember the old saying, no need, no sale. So your job is, as a problem detective, you go out first of all to establish a relationship with a prospect and second of all to find a need that your prospect has that your product or service can solve. The third part of the golden triangle of selling is called educational selling. That is the right-hand corner. Now, if you can imagine the triangle, three sides, and your customer, your client, is in the center. In educational selling, what you do is you learn what the customer needs. You learn about his or her situation, and then you teach the customer how your product or service, all things considered, is the ideal solution for what the customer needs. Now let's back up and let's talk about relationship selling, because relationship selling is 80% of the sales process. Here's the rule. If the customer really likes you, the details will not get in the way of the sale. If the customer doesn't like you, the details and the price will trip you up every step of the way. The most important thing you do in the initial stages of the conversation is to establish a high level of rapport. Remember the old saying you've heard, they don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. Today, because of complex selling, the relationship often continues after the sale. That means that once you've made the sale, it's not the end of the situation. It goes on afterwards. You have to deliver the product. You have to follow up. You have to come back and service the product or service. And if you do a good job, you have to get referrals from that customer and resales later on. So this fact that the relationship goes on after the sale means that the decision to purchase is the decision to enter into a long-term relationship. If I buy something from you, I don't just walk away like buying Lifesavers or a newspaper from the corner. I'm stuck with you. In other words, we say making a long-term buying decision is like entering into a business marriage. It requires a real commitment. It requires making a decision that basically I am going to be with you for a long time, and I'm going to be dependent upon you to fulfill your promises. And because of this, the relationship is more important than what you sell. 73% in a recent study that covered tens of thousands of customers, 73% of the reason that a person buys is because how they feel about you and your company. It's not the price, it's not the product, it's not the benefits, it's not the services, it's the feeling that a person has about entering into a long-term business relationship with you. Now, let me remind you, everybody has had the experience where they have met a prospect and you've gotten along extremely well right from the beginning. You forgot all about selling. You simply relaxed. You had a great conversation. You went back and forth, and the prospect bought from you, and it was as easy as pie. And you walked out thinking, wow, that is an easy way to sell. I mean, there was no strain, no stress, no problems. That was great. If I could do this all day long, I could make a fortune. Now, here's the truth. Really successful salespeople do that all day long. That's why they make so much money. That's why many salespeople make 5 and 10 times as much as others, is because they are relationship experts. They have developed a real easy ability to focus in on building a high-quality relationship. Now, the most important part of a relationship is building trust. When you build trust with a customer, the customer opens up to you. The customer relaxes. The customer's natural sales resistance dies down like the air being let out of a balloon. And the way that you build trust is by asking the customer questions about his or her needs. You don't talk about what it is you sell and how good it is, or your company, or how long you've been in business. You focus like an arrow, like a laser beam, on the customer, and you ask the customer questions about his or her situation. You ask the customer questions about how things are going, what he or she is doing now. Remember the rule, listening builds trust, and the way that you build trust is by asking questions. Let me tell you the key questioning techniques that you use in selling. You always begin with what are called opening or open-ended questions. An open-ended question is a question that begins with a pronoun, such as the word what, how, why, when, where, and who. A pronoun is a question that opens up the conversation. It cannot be answered with a yes or a no. If you say, how is everything going? The person can't say yes or no. You say, how long have you been doing this? How is that working for you? What are your plans for the future? Where do you plan to be in 3 to 5 years? What changes do you plan to make? If you can have everything that you like about your current product or service and get rid of everything that you don't like, what would you want to change? What would you want to be different? In other words, open-ended questions cause the customer to open up, almost like a flower in the sunshine, and give you more answers and give you more details and give you an opportunity to see where your product or service can fit perfectly into what he or she needs. Now, at a certain stage in the conversation, you begin to move to what are called closed-end questions. A closed-end question forces the customer to give you a yes or no answer. A closed-end question always begins with a verb. For example, you could say, do you like this color? That requires a yes or a no answer. Are you in a position to make this decision, or do you need to talk to someone else? Is this what you're looking for? Will you be making a decision in the near future? So you can actually bring a conversation to a close by asking closed-end questions to start with verbs. The final type of question, or actually the final type of question, is what I call a negative answer question. A negative answer question is a question where if the customer says no, they mean yes. For example, you can say, are you happy with your existing situation? If the customer says no, it means that they're open to your particular offering. So those are the three types of questions: open-ended questions, closed-end questions, and negative answer questions. And the rule is that listening builds trust. Talking doesn't build trust, but listening builds trust. And the way that you get a chance to listen is by asking questions. When a person sees you as a consultant, as an advisor, as a problem solver, as a helper, when a person sees you as a counselor or a guide, as an expert in your area, the person is much more likely to buy from you than if they see you as a salesperson trying to get their money. So position yourself as a problem solver. Ask questions that are focused on the problem or need. And no matter what the customer says, keep coming back and asking open-ended questions. Well, how does that work exactly? And so on. The third part of selling, the golden triangle, is called educational selling. Now, educational selling is where you position yourself as a teacher. Remember, the way the customer perceives you is going to determine whether the customer buys from you. And when you position yourself as a teacher, you show the customer how he or she can most benefit from what you're selling. Interesting point. A major reason that customers who are brought all the way to the end of the sales process say, "Let me think it over," is because they're not clear how to use it. They're not clear how to get the benefits from it. It's just a little bit fuzzy to them. Give you an example. Back in the late 80s and early 90s, IBM Corporation, which for years was rated one of the finest companies in the world by Fortune magazine and others, got into a lot of trouble, and they were even talking about breaking up the company because it was in such serious trouble. Well, they brought in a new president, Lou Gerstner, who brought in a team of management consultants from McKinsey and Company, and they sent them out into the field to find out why it was that IBM was having so many problems. And you know what the answer was? They said, well, when IBM was a great company, their people would come in here and they would teach us elaborately how to use their products and services and get the very most out of them. Then over the last few years, they started just shipping them, dropping them off, and saying, if you need any help, read the manual or call the hotline. And they would leave us to figure out how to use this sophisticated equipment to its highest and best use. Remember, when you take the time to teach and to show the prospect how it works and how they can benefit from it, it's absolutely amazing how much more they like you, how much more they want the product or service, how easy it is for them to buy it, how much more they trust you. Really, really important. So position yourself as a friend, position yourself as a consultant, position yourself as a teacher. Now, there's one thing that all three of these have in common, and that is listening skills. The very, very best salespeople are absolutely excellent at listening. And there's four keys to excellence in listening. Number one is to listen attentively. Listen closely. Listen without interrupting. Lean forward. Be patient. Nod. Smile. Agree. Allow silence to develop in the sales process. Listen intently. Imagine that your eyes are a sun lamp and you want to give your customer's face a suntan. Just watch your customer's mouth and eyes, and mouth and eyes, up and down. It's called flipping. Just keep focused in and hang on every word the customer says. Psychologists will tell you that when a person is intensely listened to, their heart rate goes up, their respiratory rate goes up, their galvanic skin response goes up, and they like themselves better. And if they like themselves better because of your listening to them, they're going to like you better as well and be more open to your offer. Now, the second key of effective listening is to pause before replying. Don't just jump in as soon as the person finishes speaking. Take a deep breath, wait 3 or 4 seconds, and then step in and ask and say, "Oh, that's very interesting, uh-huh," and make it clear that you're carefully considering what the person said. This enables you to hear better. It tells the person that you respect what they said better, and it enables you to avoid interrupting them if they're just organizing their thoughts. The third key to effective listening is to question for clarification. Don't ever assume that you fully know or understand what the customer has just said. Even when the customer objects, what you do is say, "How do you mean exactly?" You can use the question, "How do you mean?" in answer to almost anything the customer says, and the customer will always respond by expanding on their previous answer. "We can't afford it." "How do you mean?" "We're not in the market right now." "How do you mean?" We are happy with our existing supplier." "How do you mean exactly?" Just keep asking, "How do you mean?" And in every single case, the customer will expand it. And remember the rule, the person who asks questions has control. The person who asks questions has control. The person who is answering the questions is controlled. So whenever you ask questions, you have the complete attention of the prospect while he or she is answering the question. Then when the customer finishes answering the question, pause and ask another question. And in so doing, you control the sales conversation. You build trust and you position yourself as a trusted advisor. The fourth part of effective listening is to feed it back and paraphrase it in your own words. In other words, this is the test that proves to the customer that you really were listening. You weren't like one of those little dogs in the back of a car that just nods its head continually. You are actually listening to the customer, and you say something like this. Well, let me see if I understand what you're saying clearly. What you said was this, and your major concern seems to be that, and what you're trying to accomplish is this. Is that correct? The customer says, yes, that's it. Then and only then can you say, well, you know, I think what we have is exactly what you're looking for. I think what we have is something you really like, or what we've put together here is exactly for people like you. Always reassure the customer that what you have is probably really good for the customer. And by the way, if it's not, be prepared to tell the customer, you know something, based on what you said, what we have is probably not the best thing for you. It's the most amazing thing. Whenever you turn away business from a customer because of ethics, you'll always get more business coming back to you from somewhere else because of your ethics. Now, the next part of professional selling after the golden triangle is answering objections. Now, you'll always get objections no matter what you have to sell, even if you are giving away free money. If you are saying, look, I'm giving away free $20 bills, people are going to say, you know, what's the catch? They're always going to have a question or an objection. So your key ability is to answer the objections and to understand that successful sales have twice as many objections as unsuccessful sales. We have conducted studies, and other companies have conducted studies, that included videotaping 55,000 sales calls. And in the videotapes of 55,000 sales calls, when they went back afterwards, they found that the sales that actually ended in a sale, the transaction that ended in a sale, had far more objections than the ones that didn't. By the way, if a customer does not object, this is not a good sign. If the prospect is just sitting there saying, well, yeah, yes, no, yes, no, and not responding, this is not a good sign. This does not mean that the customer is all interested. So when the customer starts objecting about your price, well, I don't know if we can afford it, and you know, I don't know if we're in the market right now, and what we have seems to work pretty well, and we weren't going to make a decision for some time, it means that they're beginning to become interested in your offering. You should say to yourself, thank heavens they're objecting. It means that they're interested in what I'm talking about. There's four times to answer an objection. Number one is before it comes up. If you know you're going to get an objection because of your high price, say right up in front. It's called a preemptive strike. You say, you know something? Our prices are some of the highest in the market. And you know what? People like you buy from us year after year, even though they know our prices are higher than our competitors. In other words, deal with an objection that you know you're going to get it right up in front. Second time to deal with an objection is when it comes up. If the objection doesn't come up, you don't need to bring it up. But when it does come up, you can answer it immediately. That's a very good question. Let me see if I can answer it for you, and give them an answer. The third time to deal with an objection is later. One of the smartest things you can do when people object is say, you know, that's a good point, and I'm going to come back to that in a second. Can I come back to that later? They'll say, sure, okay. And if it doesn't come up again, don't bring it up again. And finally, the last time to deal with an objection is never. If it never comes up again, don't remind them, just go on. Remember, many people in a sales situation, many prospects object to demonstrate to you that they're smart, that they're aware, that they're paying attention, that they're experienced, and so on. So they ask objections to demonstrate to you that you're not talking to a dummy here. But the objections are not that intense. They are just comments that are presented in an objection tone of voice. So hear the objection out completely, whatever the customer says, because whenever the customer is objecting, you get a chance to build trust. You listen, nod attentively, pause before replying, ask, how do you mean exactly? And then feed it back and say, so your real concern is this. Every single time a customer is objecting, you get a chance to listen, and listening builds trust. Compliment the objection. If a person says, well, I don't see how it would work, you say, well, that's a very good point. I'm glad you brought that up. Whenever you compliment a person for objecting, you give them permission to ask them any question they want. And if you give them permission to give you every objection they have, at the end of the conversation, they'll have no reason left not to buy. Now, here's a way that you can handle almost any objection, especially a price objection. It's called the feel, felt, found method. Person says, I can't afford it. It costs too much. You say, well, I understand exactly how you feel. You know, other people felt the same way when they first saw the price, but this is what they found when they started using our product or service. I understand how you feel. Others felt the same way, but this is what they found. Feel, felt, found. Very powerful way to turn around any objection. Now, when you deal with price objections, remember this, that 94% of all sales made in America are made on a non-price basis. When you ask customers, and I sometimes ask an entire room full of sales professionals, how many people here have a single item about your person that you purchased solely because it was the cheapest available? In 1,000 people, no one raises a single hand, because price is never the reason for buying something. Price is a reason. Price is a concern. People don't want to pay more than they have to. But price is not the reason. In interviewing tens of thousands of customers and giving them a series of reasons for buying, series of 7 reasons, price always comes out as number 7. It always is the last reason that people give for buying. So when a person says, it costs too much, I can't afford it, you don't argue, you just ask questions, because asking questions gives you an opportunity to listen, and listening builds trust, and the higher the level of trust, the lower the level of concern about price or details. So a person says, it costs too much, you say, well, why do you say that? And listen attentively. Find out the reasons behind their price concerns. Or you can say, they say, I can get it cheaper somewhere else. You say, well, why do you feel that way? Why do you feel that way? And often they have no answer for it. They just say that to everybody. Or when a person says, how much is it? Right at the beginning, you say, Mr. Prospect, let me ask you, is price your only concern? Almost invariably, the prospect will say no. You say, well, that's good, because the price of this, when I get to it, is really great. I mean, you're going to be very happy with the price, but as long as price is not your only concern, I think we can make a really great deal for you. And finally, when a customer says, well, that's more than I expected to pay, you simply say, well, how far apart are we? How far apart are we? Now, sometimes, by the way, when you speak to a prospect, the prospect will say, well, just tell me the price. Tell me the price, and I'll tell you if I'm interested. This is sudden death as a salesperson. If you give them the price on the phone or live, they'll immediately say, I'm not interested, and the conversation will be over, and you'll have wasted your time. So you never give them the price at the beginning. You never give them a price until you've had a chance to, first of all, build trust by establishing needs and rapport and get an understanding for whether or not this prospect can benefit from what you're selling. So the customer says, just tell me the price, tell me the price. What I used to say is, geez, I don't know. I have no idea. What do you mean you have no idea? I don't know what the price is. What do you mean, Mr. Prospect, I don't even know if this is the right thing for you. But if I could ask you a couple of questions, I could give you a price that's accurate to within a couple of dollars. For example, I would need to know, what are you doing now in this area? And you immediately go into asking questions and take control of the sales conversation. But whatever you do, don't give the price up at the beginning, because it'll kill the sale. Price out of place kills the sale. Now, here's one last technique I used to use when I was telephone prospecting. I kept getting hung up on until finally I developed this method. And this method enabled me to get 4 out of 5, 9 out of 10 appointments with qualified prospects on the telephone, dialing out of the yellow pages, cold. And it's very simply this. I call up and I say, hello, my name is Brian Tracy. They say, how much is it? And I used to give them the price. I said, well, it's a sales training program. It's only this much per person. And they would say, not interested, slam. Can't afford it, slam. And I found that if I told them what it was or gave the price, they would immediately cut me off and slam the phone down. So then on, I changed to this. They say, well, how much is it? I'd say, that's the best part. If it's not exactly right for you, Mr. Prospect, there's no charge. There'd be dead silence on the other end of the line. Prospect would say, what? I'd say, Mr. Prospect, whatever I'm talking about, if it's not exactly right for you, you're not going to take it, are you? Well, no, I'm not. And if you don't take it, there's no charge. There'll be silence again. They say, well, all right, what is it then? And I say, well, it's exactly what I need to talk to you about, and I just need 10 minutes of your time. And I would roll into closing on a 10-minute appointment. I told you we'd give you some ideas on closing the sale. I'm going to give you 7 techniques for closing the sale. The first is the easiest of all. You come to the end of the sales conversation, and the prospect has a thorough understanding of what you're talking about, and you ask this question. This always is what I call the setup question, like you set the volleyball up before you spike it. Setup question is, does this make sense to you so far? Or do you like what I've shown you so far? Or do you have any questions or concerns that I haven't answered so far? In every case, if the customer says, yes, it makes sense to me, or no, I don't have any questions, or yes, I like what you've shown me, then you roll in to a closing question. The close is always the most stressful part of the sale for both the customer and for the salesperson, and this is where you make your money. As they say, you drive for show, but you putt for dough. It is in closing the sale that you make your money, and you set yourself apart from the 90% of salespeople who fall apart at this process. So when the person says, yes, it makes sense to me so far, then you ask this question. Well, then, why don't you give it a try? Well, then, why don't you give it a try? Now, the customer can say yes, no, or give you an objection, but in most cases, when you say, why don't you give it a try, they'll almost invariably say, well, all right. If they have no further questions, why don't you give it a try? You invite them to make a buying decision. Now, if you're selling services and you work for a company, you can say, why don't you give us a try? Why don't you give us a try? The word us means us, the whole company. Everybody in this company will then be going to work for you to make you happy. If you're selling hard products like cars or even homes, you can say, why don't you take it? Or if you like it, why don't you buy it? Now, the second closing technique is called the alternative close. In the alternative close, what you do is you offer an alternative between something and something else. In other words, instead of saying, if you like it, why don't you take it, you can say, which of these do you prefer? Would you like A or B? Would you like the big one or the small one, the black one or the green one? Would you like to take possession on the 1st or the 15th of the month? Would you like this car with the factory tires or with the Michelin radials, racing tires? Would you like this or would you like that? Would you like to pay cash or charge? Would you like to use Visa or MasterCard? In other words, always try to give people an alternative way of buying it or two alternatives with regard to the price. It's much easier for a person to choose one or the other than to be given an ultimatum to take one or nothing at all. The next close is called the secondary close. Now, a secondary close is when you close on a small part of the offering. Instead of the big sale, for example, you have just shown a house. The house costs $250,000. The prospect is trying to think about it, and you say, by the way, would you like the drapes and rods to be included in the offer, or should we let the owner take them with them? If the prospect says, yes, let's include the drapes and rods, they've made a decision to make an offer on the house. If you say to the person who's looking at the car, do you want to pick it up tomorrow, or would you like us to fix it up and you can take it with you today? When they take the car is secondary. Whether they take the car or not is the sale. So often it's easier for people to make their decision on a small part of the offer than on a large part. Now, the fourth type of sale is what is called the salami slice close. The salami slice close is where a person says, well, we're very happy with our existing supplier. You say, well, we don't expect you to turn all your business over to us. What we would like is just one small part of your business so we can demonstrate to you how well we operate, the kind of service we can give you, the kind of delivery, the kind of quality we have. All we want is a little piece of your business in this area. We just want a salami slice of the business. And if they give you a little bit of business to try you out or test you out, then you can use that as a test and you can take it and you can run with it to be successful. Now, the fifth closing technique is called the directive close. Now, the directive close has a 70% closing ratio with a qualified prospect. It is the most popular single closing technique used by the highest paid salespeople in every industry. It has been validated over and over again and comes up over and over on the videotapes of successful sales conversations. And it's very simply this. The directive close enables you to keep control of the sales conversation by taking the initiative at the end. You ask a closing question such as, does this make sense to you so far? prospect says, yes, it makes sense. You say, well, then, the next step is, and you assume the sale and walk through to the close. Well, then, the next step is, and you describe the plan of action, what the prospect has to do now, and you end up with these magic words, and I'll take care of all the details. And I'll take care of all the details. So that's how it works. You say, if you like what you see, well, then the next step is this. And you describe, I'll need a check from you. We'll get this filled out. I'll need your authorization on this. And I'll take care of all the details. The sixth close is called the authorization close. The authorization close is when you've met with a prospect two or three times, you fill out the sales form, the contract, in detail. And at the end of the conversation, you say, do you have any questions or concerns that I haven't covered? And the prospect says, no, I think you've covered everything. You say, well then, if you'll just authorize this, and here are the magic words, we'll get started right away. We'll get started right away. Now this is terribly important. There's a need for speed in our society today. And when you offer to get started right away, you actually increase the perceived value of your offering. So when you say, well, if you just authorize this, which is better than sign, if you just authorize this, we'll get started right away. And you put a tick mark on the contract, you put your pen on top of it, and you push it across to the prospect and just wait silently for the prospect to take action. If you just authorize this, we'll get started right away. The seventh closing technique is called the ultimatum close. And this is terribly important for you in today's market. You all have prospects that you've been calling back on. You've called back on them and back on them again, and they won't say yes and they won't say no, but you've now invested so much time in them, you can't just leave them, but they're keeping you away from developing new business. So what you do is this. You go in with the prospect with the contract completely filled out in detail. You sit down with the prospect and you say, you know, I've really enjoyed talking to you and I think we've come a long way here, but I've come to the conclusion that your time is really valuable. And either this is a good idea for you, or it's not. And if it is a good idea for you, we should get on with it right away. But if it's not a good idea, we should make a decision one way or another. What do you say? Now, I've prepared this contract, and if you'll just authorize this, we'll get started right away. And you push the contract across, and you wait. This is an ultimatum. The customer now has a choice. They can either make a decision, or they can say no. And in 50 to 60% of cases, an ambivalent, indecisive customer at this stage, you've met with them several times, will actually say yes. In 40% of cases, they'll say no, and it doesn't matter because they were never going to say anything anyway, and now you're free and you can get on with developing new business. Well, let me just finish up with the most important part of all, once you've closed the sale, is basically getting resales and referrals. The rule is, once you get a sale, remember, that person is the most likely source of resales and referrals. And a referral is worth 10 or 15 times a cold call. And so your job is to build a steady golden chain of referrals by asking for referrals, by saying, do you know anybody else who might be interested in this? The way that you get referrals is you become referable. You become the kind of person that people feel comfortable referring their friends to. So here are several things you could do. When you make a sale, call them back afterwards and say, by the way, I just wanted to call you back and thank you very much for this decision. I'm going to take great care of you. Then you send a thank you letter that they get a day or two afterwards and say, thank you very much for your business. I really appreciate it. I'm going to take wonderful care of you and so on. In other words, just something nice to reaffirm it. And then ask for referrals. Report back and ask if they know anybody else who may be interested. If a person gives you a referral, what you do is you call on the referral immediately, and then you call back and you say, look, I called on that person you told me about, and this is what he or she said, and this is what we're going to do. In other words, report back on the source of the referral. By the way, do you know anybody else who I might be able to talk to? Each time you report back, you can ask for a new referral. I've had situations where people have finally said, I'm not going to give you one or two referrals. Here's my address book. Take it back, photocopy it, call every one of these people and tell them I told you to call. It's absolutely amazing. You can double, triple, five times your business if you can get a list of great referrals from someone who's bought from you. Continually give good service to your customers and then ask for more referrals. If you get a really good referral and a good sale, send a gift to the person who sent you the referral. send a fruit basket, send a book, send something that's nice. It doesn't cost a lot, especially considering the commission that you might have earned. But when you send a gift to a person for giving you a referral, and then 2 or 3 days later you call up, you say, did you get it? Was it okay? Did you like it? They say, yes. Wow, do you know anybody else who I might be able to talk to? You will eventually reach the point where all of your customers are giving you a steady stream of referrals. You will reach the point in your career where you never have to prospect again. Well, we've come to the end of this. I want to say that the last 3 points you have to remember are this, is that the key to success in professional selling is to persist until you succeed. When you call, follow up with a letter and do the things that you said you would do. If you persist, you follow up with a phone call, follow up with new information. When you get a prospect, remember, if people put you off, it's not because they don't like you. It's not because they're not going to buy. It's often just because they're busy. Sometimes timing is everything. And sometimes the best sales you'll ever have in your life may take a year or 2 years of steady persistence before you finally make the sale.
Now, I'd like to give you a free gift as a way of saying thank you for being a loyal supporter of mine and a determined continuous learner. So find out what I've been working on lately and receive your special at www.briantracy.com/learner. That's www.briantracy.com/learner. Just go there right now and see what I've got for you. Thanks again for listening. I look forward to talking to you and maybe even seeing you soon.